We were trying to figure out what's going on with Erev Shabbos. And the issue is as follows. That we mentioned a surprising ruling of the Trumas Hadeshen, which we have to go into a little bit more detail about today. Did anyone get to see the Trumas Hadeshen inside, or at least quoted in later sources, to get a little bit of a sense of what he's saying directly? The question is as follows. We've been talking about the rule that kavsa lo zakukla, that if the Hanukkah candles go out, it's a machlokus in the Gemara, but we paskin, you're not obligated to relight them. So the Shulchan Aruch paskins lahalacha, like the Trumas Hadeshen, that we can go so far with the statement as to say that not only on a normal night of Hanukkah, where if you light the Hanukkah candles after dark and they're lit for a minute, okay, so fine, you can tell me a minute's enough. L'chadchila, it should be longer, but a minute's enough after the fact. And if it goes out after a minute, I'm done. Maybe that's what that position means. But what if it's Erev Shabbos, Friday afternoon? So we're forced to light before the time of the mitzvah because of Shabbos issues. So let's say it goes out then. Let's say Friday afternoon, a half hour before dark. I still have time to fix it. Would you still apply this position that kavsa lo zakukla? You don't have to relight it if it went out before the time of the mitzvah even starts. So Shulchan Aruch says yes. That's the din. That's what the Trumas Hadeshen says. That's the case. Kavsa lo zakukla across the board, even on a Friday afternoon when the mitzvah hasn't started yet. And that was disputed, right? Who disputed this? The Marshal, right? The Marshal, again, you can see it in his Chuvas and Simin Pehei, but he's quoted in all the Nosei Kalim. The Marshal says it's not true. And also on the page, the Taz, right? The Taz says, listen, I could accept this is the case if it was the time of the mitzvah already. But if the mitzvah hasn't begun, how could it be that you could fulfill the obligation of Hanukkah with 1 second of lighting before the mitzvah actually starts? So what we didn't have a chance to do yesterday, because we ran out of time, was to really explain how the Trumas Hadeshen himself explains his position. And the truth is, thinking about it a little bit more, I think it's actually more similar than I acknowledged yesterday to what Simcha suggested, in terms of how you understood what was going on. And basically, the Trumas Hadeshen says like this, that since we have no choice on Friday night, we can't light after dark. We have to light before dark. So therefore, lighting in such a situation, you wouldn't normally call it a mitzvah. You would call it a hechsher mitzvah. You'd call it something that we do in preparation for a mitzvah. By the way, this is a very important term for Tishrei. Maybe when we talk about some of the yontif and yonim about Tishrei, maybe next week we'll talk about the role the hechsher mitzvah plays, because it comes up a lot in Rosh Hashanah, Sukkot, and yonim. But here, it would seem to be that this is not a mitzvah. It would seem to be that Friday afternoon lighting is not the mitzvah of Hanukkah. It's a hechsher mitzvah. It's a preparatory act. However, there are times when a hechsher mitzvah seems to take on a mitzvah status. And especially if it's a situation where it's not only something you happen to do in preparation for a mitzvah, but you have to do it. If it's an absolutely necessary act, there's no way to fulfill the mitzvah without this. So then it becomes even more the case that a hechsher mitzvah attains a mitzvah status. This is a question in general. What's the differentiation? And again, this will come up in Hilchos Rosh Hashanah and Hilchos Sukkot, and we'll talk about it a little bit next week. But it's a question in general, what is the line between a mitzvah itself and something that we do for a mitzvah? But you can hear the logic that if the action is absolutely necessary, you cannot fulfill the mitzvah without this, so then that action takes on even closer to a mitzvah status than it would otherwise. So what the Trumas Hadeshen seems to be saying is, along the lines of what Simcha was saying yesterday, is that maybe taka the mitzvah gets extended, that now this is considered to be part of the mitzvah time, and you are fulfilling the mitzvah even before it's actually dark, which is really difficult intellectually, because if we have this concept, we could have said every day of Hanukkah, light Hanukkah candles all day, light Hanukkah candles in the morning. We have a notion that it's really conceptually impossible for candles to be significant during the daytime. So the Gemara says, Shraga b'tira mayahanile, that candles only are noticeable at night. So even if you want to do me a favor and say, listen, you have no choice, I'll extend you your time, But still, the concept isn't really there. So that's a big chiddush to say that that's a fulfillment of the mitzvah. But it does sound a little bit like that's how the Trumas Hadeshin backs up his position. I want to thank Adam Rosenberg, who's got off the plane from Portland, so he's not here this minute. But he brought me this morning this kutras from Rabbi Yaakov Moshe Kolevsky, who's the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael. Passed away a few years ago. His discussions about Hanukkah in this kutras. So he has an interesting suggestion in this kutras over here, that he points out that this machlokas between the Trumas Hadeshin and the Marashal says you could find this machlokas also in a different area of halacha. With Shitasam, they say the same thing regarding Pidgin HaBen. So what about the following Shiloh? And this is a Hilchos Shabbos Shiloh, which maybe we'll talk about on Sunday when we talk about our introduction to Hilchos Shabbos. This is evocative of issues we may talk about then. So let's say you have a Pidgin HaBen to make. And your son's 31st birthday, meaning his 31st day, not 31st year, but his 31st birthday, and when you would do the Pidgin HaBen, is going to fall out on Shabbos. So fine, you can't do the Pidgin HaBen on Shabbos. So you can push it off till afterwards. You don't have to do a Pidgin HaBen bo b'yom. It's not like a bris milah. You can do it the next day. But there was a discussion. Maybe you should do it like this. Let's do the act of the transaction on Friday, before the time is actually kicked in. And then we'll say that it should take effect on Shabbos. So the actual status should kick in on Shabbos, but we'll do all the actions, we'll do the transaction with the Kohen on Friday before the mitzvah kicks in. Says the Trumas Hadeshin, that can't work. That's totally useless, because that's before the time of the mitzvah, and it's not going to therefore accomplish anything. So he says, you'll lose out on both fronts, so you won't accomplish anything on Friday. And then on Shabbos, you won't be able to make a bracha either at the magic moment when it kicks in, because you're not doing anything. So you'll lose on both fronts, says the Trumas Hadeshin, it's a terrible idea. Don't think of that. However, guess who disagreed? The Marashal. Says the Marashal, he doesn't think it's such a bad idea. Says there are times when you can advance a bracha in anticipation of a mitzvah, particularly if you're prevented halachically from doing the mitzvah during that time, then you can move it up. So how do you know that? Where do you see such a thing? You see that, look at Neris Hanukkah. There we make a bracha and we anticipate the mitzvah in advance, even though we're not fulfilling the mitzvah yet. So too, you could do the same thing by Pidgin HaBen. So it's very interesting, he's probably correct with Kolevsky, that this is L'shitasam, especially because the Marashal brings in Neir's Chanukah. So what's the point of the Machlokas? That Marashal is saying, look, when it comes to Chanukah, you don't fulfill the mitzvah on Friday, but you make a bracha on the action you do in anticipation of the mitzvah. So too, Pidgin HaBen, you won't fulfill the mitzvah on Friday, but still, you can make a bracha and anticipate the mitzvah and let it kick in on Shabbos. Why does the Trumas Hadeshin not agree? Because according to the Trumas Hadeshin, it's fundamentally different, Pidgin HaBen and Neir's Chanukah. Neir's Chanukah, Chazal extended because it was impossible, so Chazal extended the mitzvah into Friday afternoon. So that's why you make the bracha. But there's no necessity by Pidgin HaBen, so you'll wait till Sunday, you'll do it then. So there's no proof that you can bring from Neris Hanukkah to Pidgin HaBen according to the Trumas Hadeshin. Because with the case of Neris Hanukkah, you're actually fulfilling the mitzvah, they extended it. But the Marashal denies that premise. He doesn't think you're actually fulfilling the mitzvah on Friday. So the fact that you make a bracha then, that's just because we allow you to make a bracha in anticipation when you're pushed up ahead of time. And therefore, you could apply the same thing to Pidgin HaBen. It's a fascinating point. You hear it? It makes sense, more or less? So that's an interesting idea. So that seems to be the issue on one level between the Trumas Hadeshin and the Marashal. What we started to say yesterday is that it's a little bit unsatisfying from the perspective of the Trumas Hadeshin, because we didn't fully explain this yet. as was pointed out by the Knesset of Ram, Avram Farbstein is one of the great Rashi Yeshiva in Hebron, that the comparison that Shmuel Sadashin uses when he talks about a Heksha Mitzvah, it's not fully satisfying. Because he's talking about, for example, the laws of Dechia. When doing a mitzvah, let's say Esei Docha Losa Sei, you're doing a mitzvah, and it lets you push away a Losa Sei, it lets you push away an Aveiru. The fact that you're involved in a mitzvah gives you some consideration. So maybe you'll say, listen, it's not only the act of the mitzvah itself, but if I have to do a Heksha Mitzvah, if there's a necessary act to prepare for the mitzvah, that's also included. Because that's all part of the process. We shouldn't start the clock from the time I'm doing the mitzvah only, but we should start the clock earlier from when I take the necessary steps to perform the mitzvah. All of that is part of what is necessary to do, and therefore that could outweigh a losase, something like that. But it doesn't mean that you've accomplished anything during that time. It means you have to do it. So you have to do it. So all right, so we'll let you consider that a priority over a losase. But still, you certainly haven't reached the finish line. You haven't reached anything. You haven't reached, say, if you want to travel to your vacation, so we'll count the time that you're traveling as a part of the trip. But you haven't accomplished anything unless you get there for at least a minute. Maybe if you have to leave after a minute, okay, at least I saw Paris for a minute. And flying to Paris is part of the trip. But if we don't consider the flying Paris, you haven't accomplished anything. So too, here the Heksha Mitzvah will be a necessary action. It's relevant for those purposes, but to say it's a fulfillment at all, that's a little bit harder to say. So that's why he suggested, as we started to say yesterday, that perhaps you have to say that this shows you that Neris Chanukah is really different than all the other mitzvahs in the Torah, in his understanding. Not everyone would see it this way, but in his understanding, you normally assume that a mitzvah requires both you should do something and that you should make sure it was successful. But the halacha of Kavsa Lo Zakukla tells us that you don't have to do the second part. You don't have to make sure it's successful. You just have to do the action. So therefore, what the Shmuel Sadashin's position is, if that's the nature, that kula is, you only have to make sure you did the action, so then even if you can't fulfill it at that time, it's before nighttime, still that's enough. That's all Chazal asked of you, to do your action, and you don't have to worry at all about how far it gets, even if that all happened during a time when it wasn't even possible to reach the finish line. And for the Taz, that was too much. You know, the Taz agrees that you only have to pay attention to your action, but at least your action should be during a time when you could have reached the finish line. And if it's before Shabbos, then we're going to require you to relight. So again, our mission today, our mission during this sugya, is to look at some of these examples, look at some of these cases, and see if we can glean any clues as to the overall nature of the relationship between Neris Chanukah and lighting them and having them lit. So this is one clue. This whole discussion about Erev Shabbos, whether we have to relight it or not, and can you even be absolved of your responsibility if the light goes out even before the time of the mitzvah, that's one clue. Does this perhaps tell us something about what's going on here, about what is exactly our obligation vis-a-vis Neris Chanukah? So far, so good? It's very hot in here, right? It's not just me. So now, let's take that to the next step. As the Mishnah says, Mishatarach b'Erev Shabbos Yochel b'Shabbos. So let's talk about Shabbos for a second. Right, we've talked about Erev Shabbos, now let's talk about Shabbos. So there is an interesting machlokas Rishonim, which you may not note, it's very subtle. You have to pay careful attention to see it. Do you get a chance to see the Ramban that talks about Tosus' question over here? So Tosus raises the question on Chaf Aleph and Aleph, that why is it, why is it that the Mishnah, the Gemara assumes that if you say you can't light on Shabbos, can't use these oils. Right, our Gemara starts off saying that the shvach oils, the insufficient oils and wicks, you can't use them either for Hanukkah during the week or for Hanukkah on Shabbos. And says the Gemara, if that's the case, it shows us two things. It shows us you can't use it during the week because kavsa zakuk la, according to that opinion, which we don't follow, but according to that opinion, that must be the case. So we can't use it during the week because we're worried you'll neglect your obligation to fix the light that goes out. And you can't use it on Shabbos because, another opinion we don't follow, you're allowed to use the light, mutar lishtamish la'ora, and therefore we're worried that you're going to tilt the light because it's so insufficient, it's such a shvach light, you're going to come to tilt it and then you'll create a malacha, you'll do an act of havara by making the wick burn more. So what is Tosus' question from that position? And Tosus asks, how do we know the second one? How do we know that Shabbos, the issue is, you're allowed to use the light and we're worried about what will happen? Why don't we just apply the same reason to both? All right, why don't we just say that Kofsa Zakukla, so you can't use it during the week because maybe you'll neglect to relight it, and you can't use it on Shabbos because you won't be able to relight it. So why is that not an adequate reason for both? So Tosus' answer is basically, you're right, even so. Right? Because what does Tosus say? Tosus says that the language of the Gemara, Bein B'chol, Bein B'Shabbos, it sounds like there's two issues. And if it was just one issue, he could have just said across the board that because Kavsa Zakukla, you can't light Hanukkah candles with these oils ever. So it emerges from Tosus that Kavsa Zakukla, fine, that's a problem. But on Shabbos, there's an additional issue, this issue of we're worried that you're going to tilt the candle. Now the Beis Halevi points out that there's an important nafkamina lahalacha between the two reasons, and there could be more, but he points out one significant one. Later Sfarim point out others, but he points out an interesting nafkamina. Just by the way, I make reference a couple times yesterday and today to the Beis Halevi. If you're wondering where all these Bate Halevi are coming from, where all the Beis Halevis are found, so Beis Halevi, if you're familiar, it was Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, the great grandfather of Rabbi Yoshe Ber Soloveitchik, who taught on this in this building. So the Beis Halevi was the author of Tshuvas, Shailos and Tshuvas Beis Halevi. So you might think, okay, so that's where all his halachic rulings are going to be found. So you look at it over there. However, that's not true for the references that we're making in this context. He has a few pages on the sugyas of Hanukkah. It's hard to reference them exactly because there's no numbers or notations. You just have to look through them. But you would never guess where it is. It's in a Sefer Beis Halevi al HaTorah, which doesn't get through all of Chumash. If you ever looked at Beis Halevi, if you want to quote the Beis Halevi on this week's Parsha, you'll have a hard time because he doesn't get anywhere near Nitzavim. He only gets in the middle of Shmos. So Beis Halevi al HaTorah is only in Bereishis in the middle of Shmos. So in between Bereishis and Shmos, he has a few pages on Hanukkah. So in those Hanukkah pages, so he has a lot about Kavsa Zakukla and the like. So there's a lot of comments over there. If you want to know where all these comments are coming from, so it's the difficult to reference notations of the Beis Halevi in the middle of the Beis Halevi al HaTorah. So the Beis Halevi points out an important nafkamina lahalacha between these two reasons. Anyone want to take a stab at what it might be? What might be a difference practically? So he notes that if the issue is we're afraid during the week it's going to go out and you might not relight it, so as Sfarim point out in general, that's a little bit of a surprising concern. Right? We normally would say, ain safik motzi midei vadei, that if we're worried, it's not going to work. So let's say a person comes to you and he only has these shvach oils. This is all he has. He has oils that are not confident they're going to last. So then you'll say, nope, don't even use them because we're afraid you might go out, so don't use anything. So isn't that a situation where we say, we say that because we're afraid it may not work, therefore don't even do the mitzvah to begin with? Why don't I say, listen, this is all I have, so let me light with what I have, and hopefully I'll be able to manage it. So that's a good question. And the Beis Halevi here assumes that that's probably true. That if somebody only had these oils and these wicks, then we'd say, yes, if that's all you have, then you might as well light with that because at least you have a shot. But anyone who has access to better oils, so then we tell that person he has to use the better oils because we're afraid that it might go out and he may not fix it. But if all you have is these shvach oils, so then yeah, for sure, you're better off doing that than nothing. So says the Beis Halevi, that's true during the week. But on Shabbos, if we're really worried about a malacha, we're really worried that because the light isn't working well, you're going to come to tilt them. So then we'd say that you shouldn't even light to begin with. That even though you'll be forfeiting the mitzvah of Hanukkah, so we tell you to forfeit the mitzvah of shofar on Rosh Hashanah when we're worried about a malacha. So we'll tell you also that it, not across the board, but that somebody who only has these oils, taklans, unfortunately he's out of the game for Shabbos Hanukkah. So that, the Beis Halevi says, is what Tosfos is telling us, that had it just been kafsa zakukla, so then we'd say, okay, do the best you can and hope for the best. But because of this additional reason of Shemiyata, that we're worried that you're going to tilt the candle, so then that means on Shabbos you can't use them no matter what, even if that's all you have.
Why doesn't the same logic apply to something
should be? Because here we're worried about a malacha, so that's a more pressing concern. When we're talking about within the same mitzvah. Right, but I shouldn't say it across the board that no issue that comes from Safek is ever more powerful than an issue that comes from Vada. You know, within the context of one mitzvah, that if you could possibly fulfill the mitzvah this way, so the concern that it's not going to work shouldn't stop us from doing it to begin with. But here, the Safek Chilul Shabbos, and that, like you see, and when the Rosh Hashanah falls out on Shabbos, so a very far-off concern that we're going to carry the shofar is enough to negate a mitzvah d'oraisa of blowing the shofar. So certainly that logic could apply here, especially because it's much more limited, it's a much more shaykh concern, it's a chiyuv d'rabbanan, right? Three ways, it's more compelling than the shofar gzeira, which we observe. So that, we could have heard that, we could hear that maybe that is the case. That's what the Beis Halevi is saying, that because of that concern, essentially, if somebody is in this position, that's all he has, Chazal said, sorry, no mitzvah for you for Hanukkah Shabbos. But for during the week, it's not the case. During the week, you might as well try it, because if that's your only hope, then maybe it'll work out. But if you have the other option of using better candles, then we'll obligate you to do that. So that's from Tosfos' approach. But the Ramban is very interesting, and the Ramban is a source of a lot of discussion. The Ramban says something else. What does the Ramban say? According to the Ramban, why is it that there's a different reason for Shabbos and for the weekdays? And how do we know that there's a different reason for Shabbos than for the week? Because, says the Ramban, since on Shabbos it's impossible for you to be lighted, so therefore we have to assume that on Shabbos everyone agrees kavsa lo zakukla. That in other words, the whole position of kavsa zakukla, you're going to have to relight it. Even those who hold that position don't hold it when it comes to Shabbos, because it's impossible to do. So therefore, that reason inherently doesn't apply to Shabbos. And that's why we need to know what the reason is, and we get this other position of Asur Lishdamish, or Mutter in this case, Lishdamish Lower. So that's fascinating on a couple levels. Jonathan?
According to their reasoning, can we say that that means he's basically explicitly against the Trumas and Deshem, because he doesn't really even tend to the fact that you could be dealing with the Arab Shabbos lighting, really when it's the Shabbos daylighting, and therefore you would have no excuse for
Zakukla
if it goes out before Shabbos?
See, if it goes out before Shabbos, then what?
So then according to... Then why point the Trumas and Deshem, you don't say your mitzvah anyway.
Right.
So you're saying ain't Zakukla, so everyone agrees it's not even... He's saying there's no possibility that you're even doing it before Shabbos and that you're not worried about Malacha.
Except he's talking about the other opinion, right? Trumas and Deshem is saying that according to us, the Kavsa lo Zakukla,
right,
even Erev Shabbos is good.
It's only within Zakukla.
Right, the Ramban is saying that even according to Zakukla, right, that even everyone would agree, there's no machlokas about Shabbos, everyone would agree that Shabbos is Kavsa lo Zakukla. So that's a fascinating position for a couple of reasons. And this gets, as you could imagine, a lot of attention. Because if we're going to say that there's some kind of fundamental difference here between the two positions, Kavsa Zakukla means you think the mitzvah of Neris Hanukkah has to burn the whole time. And Kavsa Lo Zakukla means you think all that matters is the lighting. And these are two battling notions about what the mitzvah of Hanukkah is about. These are two fundamentally different views about how Neris Hanukkah defines itself. So it's defined differently on Shabbos and during the week? The mitzvah all of a sudden becomes a different mitzvah? then during the week, it's kasha zakakla, according to that opinion, the mitzvah is to have candles burning the whole time. And Shabbos night, it's a whole different mitzvah. The mitzvah is just to have lit it, which ironically you don't even do at night. And that's enough. And it's defined differently. There's no mitzvah to have it burning the whole time. Ellie?
Not redefining the mitzvah, just saying the lights, you can't relight it.
Okay, so but therefore, if that's enough, so if you say you don't have to because you can't, right, which is basically the way the Ramban seems to understand it, so then does the mitzvah indeed no longer require you to have it burning? If normally you have to relight it because you're obligated to have it burning, and Shabbos you can't, so we say you're not obligated to, not just that you can't, but then it comes out you're obligated, so does the mitzvah redefine itself? Sorry?
So we don't have to connect this to Hadlaka versus Hanachos.
Right, no, but in terms of Kavsa Zakakla, what about that? If Kavsa Zakakla and Lo Zakakla are something, some fundamental difference there, so, which is not Hadlaka Hanach, it's a different thing, but in terms of the action versus the continuing state of having it, so does the mitzvah fundamentally change? Friday night? So I think, I'm open to suggestions, I think that there are at least three ways you could approach this issue. And definitely would love to hear if you have any other or earlier suggestions. One way you could say is, yeah, in a chanami, there is such a thing because we already see that with the timing, that every other night of Hanukkah, you have to light after dark. And Chazal allow you, by necessity, to light during the afternoon on Friday. They do make a fundamentally different institution because of necessity on Friday night. So as funny as it sounds a little bit, maybe that's the case, that maybe the Taka instituted a different mitzvah, the way or a different structure to the mitzvah for Friday night. Or you could say similarly but a little bit differently, and maybe this is what Ellie was suggesting a minute ago, that we have a principle of ones rachmana patre or ones kamanda avid, and that since it's impossible, Allah is not going to let you do anything different, so we'll consider it as if you did it. So normally, during the week, you'd be obligated to fix it. Shabbos, you can't. So we'll credit you as if you did fix it. And practically, you won't have to fix it because you can't, but it'll be the same impact halachically because you have no choice. So onus is a different formulation. You know, onus rachmana patre means chazal, or the Torah rather, the Torah lets you off the hook when you have no choice, when you're forced to do an aveira, or you're forced not to do a mitzvah, so the Torah patters you. It's a question whether we extend that to the phraseology of ones kemanda avid, which would mean not only that you're not in trouble, but it means it's as if you accomplished something. That's a bigger chiddush, to say that if you tried to do a mitzvah and it was impossible, should we actually credit you as if you did the mitzvah? So it's a question what the right terminology is. But should we go so far as to say, all right, look, Friday night, there's nothing you could do. So yes, it's fundamentally different than the rest of the week. And therefore, it's as if you did it. But you could say a third way also. And some of the Achronim point in this direction. And this would be very, very significant for understanding a lot about how this whole sugya plays out. And it could be, and the Ramban's language lends himself to this also, that what if we were to say that even the position of Kavsa Zakakla, the position that normally obligates you to relight the Hanukkah candles, maybe that position acknowledges that there is something you already fulfill the moment you light the candles. And that the obligation to relight them if they go out, even those who insist on such an obligation, that's something extra. That's a new obligation. There's really two components here. There's a mitzvah to light it, and there's a mitzvah to maintain it. But the mitzvah to maintain it is only there when it's possible, when there's something you can do about it. And if it's Friday night, it's Shabbos, you can't do anything, so then, okay, there's no such obligation. But it doesn't necessarily redefine the mitzvah in a fundamental sense. That even Kavsa Zakakla agrees. This is a whole new plane now. Maybe they agree that lighting it already is an accomplishment. That they don't necessarily assume that if it goes out a minute after being lit, that you lost the whole mitzvah. they obligate you to relight it, but not because the assumption is that lighting it by itself didn't already accomplish something. And therefore, if it's impossible to do, it's Friday night, so then that's not going to be an obligation, and it'll be revert to the basic din that lighting is enough. That could be very, very significant. And that leads us into another topic. Do you have a question?
Yeah. When we say zakhlah, it goes out, like, I'm not going to add more oil and redo the whole thing. I'm just putting a match to it.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting question also about to what extent do you have to... I mean, it's still going to be a Shabbos problem either way. You know, relighting
it. Right, just on a leap day.
Right, so that's actually the question. That'll have to get to tomorrow because it has some interesting implications of what exactly that means. So hold that question up for tomorrow. We only have a few minutes left. I don't try very much on Tuesdays to not go overtime because I don't want to make anyone late for Bible. But this brings up a whole other issue, which we'll try to just start now and we'll finish tomorrow. God willing, we'll try tomorrow to go at a pace where we finish the whole Kaf Sazakakla so we can do the other sigils before Yantif. There's still a lot of topics in this, subtopics in this topic. But this brings us up to another issue. That if we're going to distinguish between Shabbos and weekdays based on the Ramban and say that when it's possible, according to the opinion of Kaf Sazakakla, you have to do it, but on Shabbos, when it's impossible, you don't have to do it. So how does this affect the question of your own personal culpability in the candle going out? When the Gemara says kafsa, right, it seems to suggest that you lit it normally and something happened, it went out, something unpredictable happened, the candle happened to be extinguished. But what if you extinguish it yourself? And so if you extinguish it yourself, does that make a difference to halacha? What do you think? Anyone see anything about this? What if you're the one, you came and you extinguished
the shahar? Uh-huh.
You
said that you don't relight it. Otherwise, it's just better to.
Oh, so is there a difference, though, between intentionally and unintentionally?
Yeah, I think we should amaze it through that.
Oh, so that's an interesting discussion. So just we'll get our feet wet with it a little bit now and we'll have to continue it tomorrow. But the Shulchan Aruch paskins, it says in the Shulchan Aruch paskins quoting the Ran. The Ran is here in the Masechta Shabbos, Tesemet Aleph, Bedap Beharif. And the Ran himself is quoting the Shuvas HaRashba, Tav Kuf Lamed Tes. But Rashba, quoted by the Ran, quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, says as follows. That if you yourself, let's say you're trying to fix the candle, a very common scenario, you're trying to fix the candle itself, and through doing so, you end up extinguishing the candle accidentally. The shogeg, while you're attending to the candle, you end up extinguishing it. So, says the Rashba, quoted by the Ran, quoted by the Shulchan Aruch, it seems to him like you would not have to relight it. Same did of Kavsa Lozakakla. And then he goes on to say, if you decide to relight it anyway, so then, based on his position that you're not obligated to, so you would assume you wouldn't make a bracha upon relighting it. Now it happens to be, this is yet another issue which our friend the Maharshal disagrees. The Maharshal writes in the same Shuvah, Pehei, again everything is, there's about a line and a half in the Shuvah's Maharshal where there's three or four psakim in that line and a half and each one is quoted separately in the poskim, so you think he's writing hundreds of pages, but it's all a line and a half in the Maharshal. So he says there that he thinks if you yourself extinguish the candle, you're obligated to relight it. But the Rashba disagrees, and the Rashba says that if you do it bishogeg, he thinks there's no obligation to relight it. The Rashba is writing earlier, he's not quoting the Marshal, but the Rashba's view against the later writings of the Marshal is that if you do it yourself bishogeg, you're not obligated to relight it. Hi.
Marshal say you have to make a rock.
So it's not clear from the Maharshal to make a bracha, but he says that you're obligated to, for Merakak, I don't think he says this clearly, but he says you do have to, well, halach l'mais, they have to, but according to him, to his own opinion, he thinks you have to relight it, so he sees it as a pretty straightforward thing. So already you have this differentiation between the Maharshal and the Rashba, that if you yourself do it, even according to us, kavsa lo zakakla, that normally if it goes out, you don't have to relight it, but if you do it yourself, Maharshal says, you relight, and you have to relight, and the Rashba says you don't have to relight. Now, what if you did it on purpose? Okay, so the Rashba's language where he emphasizes shogeg. So that sounds like he's saying, and that's the way some achronim read it, although I think it's questionable, but it sounds like he's saying, oh, but if you did it on purpose, so then that's different. If you did it on purpose, then we'll obligate you to relight it. And that sounds like the reading, for example, of the Prima Gaudim. In the Prima Gaudim, I think that's what you're referring to, the Shai Rasim quotes the Prima Gaudim, that the implication is that either Shulchan Aruch quotes or the Rashba that Peshogeg you don't have to. Sounds like you're saying that if it's been mazed, you do have to. So that sounds like that's the position of the Prima Gaudim and others who read that into the Rashba and the Ran. It's interesting that Reb Shlomo Zalman has a tshuva, which we'll talk about more tomorrow, a fascinating tshuva, where he reads the Prima Gaudim as saying that he thinks even the Prima Gaudim doesn't think that's true, Maker Hadin. Because the Prima Gaudim, I think, is basing it on this fact. It's not so clear. But I think he's basing it on the fact that the Prima Gaudim also still says that it still doesn't require you to make a bracha if you did it on purpose. If you did it on purpose, you have to relight it, but without a bracha. So the fact that he doesn't require you to make a bracha, says Reb Shlomo Zalman, means he doesn't think it's a real chiyuv, but still, if you did it b'mezid, you should relight it. So there's one more permutation to add, and we'll try to analyze all this tomorrow. So tomorrow, during Seder, try to see as much of these things as possible and think about them as much as possible. But what if, we'll add one more level of distinction, what if not just you do it on purpose, but we can make it worse, let's say you know you're going to do it. At the moment that you light the candles, you know your declared intent is that 1 minute later you're going to extinguish it. Does that make things worse? So we have four levels. Right? If you do it yourself, even b'shogeg, the Marashal says you got to relight it. That changes the scenario, and the Rashba disagrees. But it sounds like the Rashba might agree that if you do it b'mezid, then you do have to relight it. And then you could add on to that, that whether or not you accept that generally when it comes to mezid, what if it was always your intent from the beginning? Like it's one thing to say, all right, you lit it in good faith, and then a few minutes later you decide to purposely extinguish it. But what if you knew from the very beginning that you were going to extinguish it? Does that make it worse? Does that undermine the mitzvah even further? So those are a couple of distinctions within the Shaila. And think about along the lines specifically of what we just said from the Ramban, that maybe there's a big difference between when you could deal with the Zakuk law and when you can't, and how that plays into the equation. How is that going to match up these issues of intent, and you're doing it even inadvertently, and you're doing it from the beginning with that intent? All of those issues, God willing, we'll try to pick up with tomorrow and hopefully finish up this topic if possible.
Have a wonderful day.